When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Within football, we have silos.
We're going to talk about hiring the man first, the coach second. I think he is an unbelievable person.
Every single person in this locker room right now is playing professional football.
Aaron get COVID, and the week they're like, yeah, you starting. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Just here to tell you, Pack is back.
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Giannis.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers Podcast. We're on Packers Podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd. Boys,
hello. Greetings, gentlemen.
And the Green Bay Packers once again won the NFL draft. What a spectacular event. Everyone was, well, you know, I'll start it right off the top. You know, people are probably coming into this thinking I'm going to have some bad things to say about Mark Murphy. And those people would be wrong for today, at least for a little bit,
because
the draft was, I mean, it could not, I don't think the draft could have gone any better as far as the Green Bay Packers hosting. You know, it was estimated it was going to be like 250,000 people. It was 600,000. There didn't seem to be any real terrible things in logistics or getting people there.
Where did people stay?
I think what ended up happening, so Wildy was talking about this because he watched the news, how businesses like downtown were actually upset because they had no like bump in business. And in some instances, it actually hurt them because they had extra staff on that didn't need to be there, because most of the people, it seemed like, were Wisconsin natives. Like even Uber drivers, he said. He talked to his one buddy who was an Uber driver, and they didn't have like much to do at the airport because people didn't really fly in. It was mostly like Wisconsin or people in the immediate area who would drive in for the day for the draft. So that was part of
it.
So
just the state of Wisconsin came in to watch the
draft. Yeah. Wildy was saying it was like 80 or 90% Packer fans that were there, which is kind of expected. But either way, it's like, and hearing some national guys talk about it, it's like that looked like a good event. And I don't know, you know, I wasn't paying attention as much when it was in Kansas City or Nashville or Detroit, but it seemed like it went off pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, it looked good. I don't know. It looked like there was tons of green and gold in the crowd, to be expected, obviously. But I guess I would have thought, I don't know, I just assumed everyone like stayed in Milwaukee and drove up back and forth for the day or something like that, because that's the only place that I'm like, you could actually stay. If there's 600,000 right. people going to a city of 100K, it's like, what do you do with these people?
Well, I mean, so the 600,000 is across the 3 days, so there's right. probably a pretty good overlap.
So it's
between
like 200,000
first round. Yeah, exactly. Because I think initially there was talk that, you know, Green Bay was potentially going to approach like the Detroit record of 250,000 on the first night, and we had 200,000, but I was seeing stuff online like the NFL paused admission into the draft area until some people left. So it's almost like,
so they couldn't just beat the record.
Just exactly the amount of space mm-hmm. that we had available, maybe with that setup, it was like you're not gonna put more than 200,000 in because the first responders, the police or fire or whatever, won't allow it. I don't know.
It was probably that's probably will never be broken, that record in Detroit, because there's so much open space in Detroit because no one lives there. So just like open space everywhere. So it's like, yeah, we'll put more people in. Why not?
They're in the adjacent empty warehouses cheering on their favorite team drafting. Yeah. But I mean, that's how I knew it was, or when I was like, oh, damn, they actually did it, was that first night, like 5 minutes into the draft, the Packers tweeted out, we are at capacity and no longer admitting people. Mm-hmm. It's like, shit, they did it. And then, I mean, even Murphy announcing that pick, he probably could have cut the intro down 30 seconds to a minute. There was a little, like, kind of repetitive stuff in there. But when he said for the first time, I'm watching it. And I'm probably just brainwashed for being a Packer person and the way that the franchise does things. Because when he says for the first time since 2002, I'm like, oh, I literally said, oh no.
Because you knew it was a wideout?
Well, of course. Yeah. What else would it be since 2002? And then he says Matthew Golden. But him saying that and then the pause and then announcing the name, I mean, if you were there, it had to have been one of the best non-actual football moments at Lambeau Field, or, you know, on the Lambeau Field campus. Like, can't fault him for that. It seemed to be a success. So, hey, I still don't like Mark Murphy, but we can throw him some roses for, you know, get an A-plus on the draft.
I mean, I know there were some jokes after the fact, like, did we really pick Matthew Golden, or did Mark Murphy just say that because he knew if we took an offensive lineman,
that's what Goot
he would
said.
Get the ever-loving shit out of
Goody,
him.
Goot said, yeah.
He was like, I said a different name, and Mark just went up and said whatever he wanted.
The one thing that it could have affected, because we know Goody, and he's done in the past, and he's traded back, but the Falcons later, a couple picks later, trading back into the first round, giving, I forgot who they traded with, to give them next year's first and a couple other picks. That's one thing, maybe, if it wasn't in Green
Bay, right,
that wouldn't have happened. But either which way, I'm not upset with drafting Matthew Golden. I still, like, a couple of the interviews that Mark Murphy did, it was funny, the next day on, like, Kay Adams' show, his prediction was, we're going to trade up once and move back twice. We didn't have any trades in this draft. I can't remember that ever happening.
But did you watch the interview? He just said that in the middle of a different question.
I thought she was asking for, like, a prediction.
I swear,
I thought she asked for...
Oh, maybe I saw the clip wrong or something. Maybe it was cut up. But I saw the clip and it was like... I thought she even said something afterwards where she was like, oh, you're just throwing a bunch of stuff at me when I was asking you. I thought she said something about Jair or something.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. It could have been something like that. And, I mean, there were other little things, too, like the fans in the front row with a Mark Murphy head, and Kay Adams asked him about that, too. And he's like, oh, I don't know who did that. It's like the Packer people were handing those out. And I'll say, so we did have one comment last week on Spotify, Logan. And I love this. I think I sent this to you, Todd. He commented on the episode last week and said, watching the first round at 3 a.m. in the Middle East and seeing Packer fans holding Mark Murphy signs, I could feel Spencer's anger from here, which I really
Wait, he was in the Middle East?
Logan, yeah, who was watching, who was listening
to
our podcast.
3 a.m., that's dedication.
Uh-huh. Send that man a koozie.
That would be tough.
You'll get
maybe,
it in
maybe when he comes
six
back.
6 to 8 years.
Yeah. We'll get into the other stuff with the announcing and Golden and then Sorrell doing their own chants with the fans and everything. But this episode, we'll break down the draft, go over all the picks. We'll briefly go over the unrestricted free agents. We have a couple other fillers at the end of a couple interesting things Matt LaFleur said on Bussin' with the Boys. And also, we got to talk briefly about this Brett Favre documentary coming out on Netflix. But kicking it off, first player, obviously we already mentioned him, Matthew Golden, taken 23rd overall. I don't even think we said what pick we had last week, but I think everyone kind of assumed, or they knew what pick we had. But Matthew Golden, 5'11", 194, a 4.28 40, very, very fast. I believe that was the fastest out of all the receivers in this year's draft. Doesn't really play up to that 40 time, which everyone's kind of said, but he's really smooth. He's very quick. You know, his stop-start speed is really good and a solid route runner. Wasn't a super productive player for Texas. He had the lowest yards per game for a first-round pick since 2018. Again, for his last year in college, I think it was like 60 yards per game or something, I believe. But again, since 2018, the lowest for a first-round pick. He loves football. You know, he came out and they were saying, you know, he's a dog. Everyone, Goody, LaFleur all said that he loves football. Most big birds had him as like the 15th best prospect. Still only 21 years old. Comparisons, and I mean, there's a lot of them. Stephon Diggs, Chris Olave, Packer comparisons. Greg Jennings is what I've heard the most of, but I've also heard people compare him to Jaden Reed and even Romeo Doubs before the draft. I forgot who I was listening to. It might have been NFL Stock Exchange, but compared him to Romeo Doubs. Did not know the Go Pack Go chant, which was a little funny. It was nice seeing him up it? There.
What do you say?
He said one, two,
Packers
three,
on three.
Green Bay.
Yeah, oh, Packers that's what it was.
It was Green Bay. And he's going to wear number 22 after initially going with 81. So I'll open up to you guys. Todd, what did you think of the pick?
I mean, I like the pick. I didn't think he was going to be there. A lot of the boards that I saw had him going early. So I didn't know a whole lot about him, to be honest. But after like looking, watching his highlights and stuff, and then reading some of the stuff people said about him, he's like kind of an exciting player. I think he was like number one in, was it, are they in the SEC or are they still in the,
yep.
Okay, I think he was the number one player for 20 plus yard catches in the SEC, if I remember that
right. And
that's
right. With a terrible deep ball thrower.
And so like that was really interesting. And then like you just see some of the, like the more spectacular catches he has. And I believe his drop rate was super low. Like,
yeah, he had pretty
like
good
crazy
hands.
Low. And he was one of the higher players for contested catches. So good hands, which is nice to see on a team that like literally could not catch the ball last year. It was like, it was just painful to watch. So hopefully he brings that. And then it is weird to see a guy run a 4.29 and then you watch his tape and you're like, huh. That doesn't look like 4.29. That's not what 4.29 looks like. So I don't know what's up with that. I don't know if like, were the clocks off or
I almost
did he grease the wheels of the stopwatch guy? Like
yeah, the multiple don't you run it twice
the
at the
lasers?
Combine?
Yeah.
I almost view the 40 time thing and not matching up with, you know, his tape as a positive because he's still a pretty raw prospect. You know, he played 3 years in college. Again, he's 21 years old. He played the 2 years at Houston first, and he didn't have good hands there, wasn't a refined route runner. And you almost think once he gets better at the game and learning the position, maybe he can, you know, his game speed's gonna go up too. So that's kind of the way I'm being an optimist here, but that's how I'm looking at it.
I mean, I saw that he's got like a really fast like 10-yard
yes.
I think
split
10 yards
is really
split
good.
In the 40. So I think maybe part of it, and you touched on it, Spencer, is Quinn Ewers was not a very good deep ball thrower. And I saw some highlights where, you know, he's going deep and he's got a step or two and then he has to like completely turn around and come back for the ball. So if the ball is thrown on target and he runs underneath it and he runs away from a dude, you know, we might look at that a little bit differently. But the thing that I was going to mention, Spencer, you mentioned, you know, not huge stats at Houston, a little bit of a slow start last year. What I appreciated was that he turned it on late in the season when Texas was making the push for the college football playoff. He had 160 yards against Georgia in the conference championship game. He went for a 150 against Arizona State in the college football quarterfinal game. So he turned it on. That's where he got a lot of his stats, I think, was kind of those last 6, 7, 8 games out of the season. So I think the optimism is that he figured something out, maybe a new system at Texas or something, trying to get comfortable in the offense, get timing down, and he's going to use that as a springboard into his NFL career rather than be closer to the player that he was for the first 2.5 years of his college career.
Yeah, like the arrow is just pointing up with him. And again, it was his like last 4 or 5 games where he really started producing. A lot of people were saying that Texas didn't really know what they had in him. Again, he was a transfer and he wasn't there wasn't a ton of interest in him in the transfer portal too. So it's just one of those things where he just got so much better so quickly. And on the biggest stage, you know, one, it's when games mattered and in big moments, he really showed up, and I think he talked about that too. So it's one of those things where it's like you're saying, maybe crunch time. The Packers haven't been as good the last couple of years, obviously the drop. So seems like a perfect perfect prospect to bring in. Wish he was a little bit taller. That's about the only real negative about him, but hard not. If I could filter out my brain of, you know, just all the way the Packers draft, I'd feel better about him just because we've had so many great second round wide receivers where that's just part of what I'm always thinking.
I'm excited to see him on like deep crossers, yes, posts, in breaking routes, like slants, like get him into the middle of the field and running away from dudes. I'm excited to see how LaFleur uses him.
I forgot who said this. I heard this week, but the Packers last year, Jordan Love, I should say, was 33rd or like 35th in intermediate passing last year. And this is the perfect guy to bump that up, which is something that like at the end of 2023, we were absolutely killing, you know, on those crosser routes with God. Did we have Jaden Reed? Yeah, with Jaden Reed and guys like that and Romeo Dubs. Do you have something else, Todd?
I was just going to make a comment on like the speed coming out of Texas the last couple of years. Xavier Worthy, I think, broke the record last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then fastest one at the combine this year is Matthew Golden. It's like interesting how much they're like the new Miami.
I think this was
And then did they have Isaiah Bond that went undrafted that mm-hmm. because of off the field concerns? I'm not saying anybody should have drafted him.
He still hasn't signed.
He was also a burner.
Oh, really?
And I don't think the Packers had drafted a player out of Texas since
JerMichael.
So JerMichael was the last one, and then we took two of them in the first four rounds. Yeah. Moving on to our second round pick, probably the most surprising out of the draft, Anthony Belton, 54th overall offensive lineman out of NC State. He is a monster, 6'6", 336 pounds, 24 years old, a 7.72 RAS score. Him and Golden were both visits. They came in on visits. 5 out of the 8 draft picks came in on visits. So again, that's what we should be paying attention to. By consensus draft boards, he was a reach. I think a lot of people were a little upset on the old Twitter when the pick first got announced. One, because it seemed to be a bit of a reach, and two, you know, it's an offensive lineman, which isn't super sexy when we have other needs. But I don't know if you guys know this, there's 32 teams in the league. There, every team gets 30 visits. He went on 18 visits. So there was a lot, he was getting a lot of attention from the league. So if we didn't take him in the second round, it doesn't seem like he was going to be there in the third. But again, big dude, play tackle, probably going to move to guard, it seems like. You know, both Goody and LaFleur said in their pressers after the draft that Morgan is going to be, you know, it's going to be at left tackle, Walker and Morgan, and I'm only going to assume it's Sean Ryan and Belton who's going to battle at right guard. But again, shows the Packers beefing up the offensive line. Obviously moving on from Josh Myers, who was a big dude but didn't play that way, and now bringing in a guy in Aaron Banks, bringing in Anthony Belton, beefing up again. I mean, the Eagles, the Lions are kind of the prototypical teams that everyone else is trying to copy, and we got mauled against the Eagles in the playoffs, so nice to beef that up a little bit. And again, I think it shows that unless Morgan or Belton show nothing this year, Rashid Walker and Sean Ryan are probably going to be gone after this season. Still don't know who's going to win those battles, especially at right guard, because I think Sean Ryan's been pretty steady there, or he was last year. And the last thing that I have on the pick is, you know, we've had these little things where, you know, Kevin King over TJ Watt, there was Love over Higgins, and this year it might be the fact that we took Belton when, what's his name, that corner, Trey Amos was available. That's about the, like, if we would have taken him, that would have been fine, more of a need. Seems to be a solid player. He meets all the Packers' measurables, but that's about the only real other player that we could have taken in that spot, IMO.
Yeah. For this one, I was disappointed that we didn't take an edge defender just because of, like, the need there. Did obviously double dip later, but it just was like felt a little bit spending that much draft capital in the second round taking that pick. It's like, man, we need depth on the offensive line, and it's like it's a position we're so good at. It's like, man, do we really need this guy? Doesn't matter. We got him. I did read, too, that he plays more like at, like, 360 is what he was playing at during 2020, yeah. 2024.
And we got so Caleb Jones again.
That's interesting. But, I mean, you look at it, you got Aaron Banks. I think he's, like, close to 330. And then you've got, if you know, you put Belton over there on the other side if he does win the battle. And it's, like, those are some maulers. And, like, the fact that, like, they both seem pretty mean. I don't know if Aaron Banks ever spit on anybody, but Anthony Belton got kicked out of a game for spitting really? On somebody across from him last that. Season. So, and like he gets like personal foul, ooh. Like penalties somewhat often. I think he had like, I might be wrong on this. We'll have to double check, but I think he had like 14 of them. Like over the maybe it's his career
personal foul penalties.
Maybe that's his career.
That might be a red flag.
Okay, I'm gonna look it up.
Even
after
career,
this,
that's bad.
Maybe that's a lot. But either way, he's a dog. He's mean. He's like who's the big dude from Miami? A big white dude from Miami that was kind of a bully, back in the day.
Richie Incognito,
who's just like mean. Yeah. Like from what I hear, from
I mean,
what
he
I've
was
read,
an asshole.
It kind of sounds like this guy's a little bit of an asshole.
It did come
too.
Out earlier this off season that I forgot who was the bull EE. The guy in Miami, remember the whole bullying scandal when Joe Philbin was there?
Zach Martin is what you're asking? Who's the bully?
Jonathan Martin. The one
yes,
that got
it came
bullied.
Out again this year that he pretty much said that he overreacted and that Incognito was an asshole, but not as bad as people kind of made it out to be. You know, I don't know if he got cut or suspended, but that was a very odd fiasco going on. Like, what, 2014, 2015? 2013, one of those years.
The couple of things I'll say about Belton that we haven't talked about, you know, you mentioned kind of how the board fell. Trey Amos was still on the board. Mike Green was still on the board.
Not a Packer guy.
I had my eye on, but the more I read about him, the less I liked him. But I'm just looking at the way that the draft picks went the rest of the next few rounds, and he's listed on Pro Football Reference as an offensive tackle. I think, you know, maybe next year he'll maybe compete for a tackle spot. But the rest of the next offensive linemen taken, the next several in the rest of the second round and through the entire third round are listed as offensive linemen, which to me is an interior guy in college. And you know that we love taking our college tackles and dropping them inside. The next college tackle drafted didn't go until the fourth. So was Goody kind of playing that draft board a little bit? And if he fits the size and physical characteristics, I guess I'll say that he's looking for an offensive lineman now, bigger, stronger dudes that are kind of maulers in the running game. I mean, I think we saw it with Josh Jacobs last year. Like, we want to be a 50-50 split run pass team. So I think he fits a little bit of a reach, but you know, I wasn't super high on Elgton Jenkins when we drafted him either, and we saw what he's gone on to become, so I'll give Goody the benefit of the doubt.
So I fabricated the 14. He had 24 penalties okay. in his okay. career. So I don't know where I came up with that number.
If you had 14 personal fouls, I don't think the Packers are drafting him. I guess Rashid has had some holding issues in the past, but that's a whole different animal. Is it bad that I like the spitting thing?
I was gonna say
what?
Is it bad that I like the spitting thing that he got kicked out of a game for that? It's like
I like it.
I don't want
to.
I mean, how many times does a second guy get caught and get busted? I mean, maybe he took something worse than that.
There you go. I like the blind. Well, maybe it wasn't that bad out of Billy.
I don't think I'm fine with not taking the high road, especially if you're on the offensive line. I want my offensive lineman mean. You know what I mean? Screw it.
I remember TJ Lang and Josh Sitton back in the day. How many times did they come clean the pile at, you know, right as the whistle was blowing or after the whistle blew?
I mean, don't
I remember
do something
one against Dallas in the playoffs. Like, I loved it.
Yeah, don't do something stupid in an important moment. But, like, if someone's giving you shit or going after your quarterback, like, I want my offensive lineman to go beat the shit out of them. You don't want them to be passive.
True.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The next pick, Savion Williams, who Goody said they almost took in the second round, too, that they had a second round grade on him. But Savion Williams, another interesting pick. He was drafted number 87 overall wide receiver out of TCU. He is 6'3", 222 pounds, 23 years old, ran a 4.48 40. He was coming off a workout when he ran that 42, so he might actually be faster than that. He looks pretty fast in his tape, but he is the super gadget player. His comp is Cordell Patterson. There's a couple other ones out there. Everyone, it seems like Debo is always...
Debo.
Everyone always tries to say, oh, this guy's every Debo year. If they have some gadget to their game. Really, really bad hands. Not a great route runner. LaFleur even said that he isn't much of a route runner. He's going to have to learn a little bit more how to play a receiver. But he seemed pretty giddy talking about him. Todd?
You mentioned the bad hands, but I think he had one of the highest in college football for contested catch rates, win rates.
Interesting.
So I read that he has a lot of like focus drops or like concentration drops. So okay, for whatever that's worth.
LaFleur did say this too, going along with it and how he was gushing about it. And again, this is a third round pick. He said was very intelligent because he came in on a visit as well.
So not Cordero.
Yeah, that was my thought too, because you hear Cordero. I mean, he had a great career, but not exactly the smartest. I mean, he couldn't. I thought it was kind of perfect for the Vikings because they traded away Percy Harvin, signed Greg Jennings, and then drafted CP. And I was like, they have Greg Jennings, one of the best route runners in the league. He's going to be able to help CP out. Never really. He was a great running back for the Falcons a couple of years ago. But LaFleur said, very intelligent, can carry the load, and I think he's a movable chess piece, which is a very interesting thing to say. I feel better about our jet sweeps, having him out there.
I was just going to say that.
Instead of Jaden Reed, who is fine on them, but he did get banged up a bit.
And Alan Lazard.
Oh, God.
Way don't. Better. That play works. Without
still seeing that in person, I was just in disbelief.
If Savion Williams is on the team, Super Bowl.
Yeah. He's probably going to be our day one kick returner. He was very good at doing that. And, I mean, if he hits, he's going to be a really, really good football player. His highlight tape is very fun to watch. Could be something, could be absolutely nothing if he can't put it together.
I mean, that's what you're starting to get into in the third round a little bit. You know, a guy that has the ability, but there's some flaws. And if you're able to coach him up, like, it just seems like there's so much versatility in this guy's game. I mean, he had 60 catches his senior year. He had 51 rushing attempts. Yeah. He had almost 1,000 total yards. He had 6 receiving touchdowns, 6 rushing touchdowns. He even threw a passing touchdown last year. So it's like, just get the ball in this guy's hand somehow, and he's going to make something happen. So, you know, is he going to be our guy on bubble screens, tunnel screens, you know, swing passes out of the backfield. I remember how we used Randall Cobb out of the backfield, Swervin Irvin back in the day on end of rounds. You mentioned the kickoff returns. Like, just get him the ball however you need to, and let's see what he can do in the open field.
And this leads me into, you know, I've had similar thoughts in the past, but I think the most important non-player in that building this year might be Ryan Mahaffey, the wide receiver coach. So I've obviously gotten on Jason Vrabel in the past, who was our wide receiver coach for 3 years, I believe, before that. He got promoted up to passing game coordinator. Our passing game really didn't get better last year. Maybe he's better at like calling plays than coaching up guys. But again, we have a very, very young and talented wide receiver group. Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs have played in the league now for 3 years, which is weird to say. And they're like the most veteran guys, obviously. And they're the only guys who have played with legit vets in that room because they got to play with Sammy Watkins and Randall Cobb. And then we have Dontayvion Wicks, Jaden Reed. Now we have two more rookies. Have any of our receivers in the last 3 years like improved? I feel like just about all of them were at their best their rookie years, and none of them really improved, right? I mean, maybe Romeo Doubs has gotten better over time, but Jaden Reed kind of took a dive last year. Dontayvion Wicks were really high on, and he couldn't...
He took a huge step back.
Back half of the year, his hands did get better, but man, it was really, really bad the first half of the year. And now with two more rookies, it's just tough. I looked into, and I think I've said this in the past as well, just looking in the NFC North, the Vikings have Keenan McCardell is their wide receiver coach. He played in the league.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that's what you said when I said it last year too. He was in the league from 1991 till 2007. He won multiple Pro Bowls. He's been a receiver coach since 2010. He's the Vikings receiver coach right now. You look at the Bears, who stole from the Lions with their receiver coach, Antoine Randle-L, obviously a successful NFL career, played against him in the Super Bowl in 2010, was with the Skins before that. And he's been, you know, he hasn't been a receiver coach as long. His first year having a room was 2021. But obviously, I mean, he helped turn, why can't I think of him?
Amon-Ra St. Brown
into one of the better receivers in the league. And then the Lions, to replace him, they promoted Scotty Montgomery, who was the running back coach, but he's a guy too who was a receiver in the league for 6 years. He was the wide receiver coach at Duke, and he's been a receiver coach in the league for the last five, six years. And he coached up. He was the Steelers wide receiver coach back in 2010 with Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, and coached those guys up. And then we have our guy, again, Ryan Mahaffey. His experience is he was a fullback at Northern Iowa. This is the first time he's been a position group in the NFL. And before this, he was the assistant offensive line coach. He was a quality control coach before that. The offensive coordinator for Northern Iowa. He was the tight end coach at Western Kentucky. He was the co-offensive coordinator and receiver coach at Northern Iowa. And before that, he was a grad engineer at Notre Dame the 1 year that Matt LaFleur was also on the staff at Notre Dame. So if this guy wasn't in Notre Dame that year, I think he would still be coaching in college. And now he's the wide receiver coach on one of the youngest and more talented receiver groups in the entire league. And again, we haven't seen any type of real growth from this group in the last couple of years. Last year was his first year coaching, so it's like he's the one guy I have the biggest question mark on our entire coaching staff. When we're trying to win a Super Bowl this year, again, the way these drafts have lined up, like these next couple of years are going to be the time to do it. I really wish we had a more veteran coach leading these guys. So that's, I'm going to probably be bitching about him all year.
Better coach, or I mean, more leadership in the locker room too. I mean, that's like, that's what I feel like this group has really missed. I feel like that's almost like bigger.
I know, and I agree, and that's what I was bitching about last year too.
Well, I think if you have a Keenan McCardell that played in the league for 13 years as your receivers coach, maybe it's a little less critical that you have that veteran in the room. Or if you have Antoine Randall that played for a decade in the league, you know, but I completely see your point, and I agree with it, Spencer. Like, if we're going to go with these guys that were tight end coaches at a terrible FCS program in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, like, what do we see in this guy that we're willing to promote him and make him the receivers coach other than, oh, hey, I worked with him for a year back at Notre Dame 15 years ago. And then to not have that veteran in the room that's been in the NFL and is able to teach, like, hey, this is how we watch film, this is how we practice, this is how we prepare for games, and this is how we play. Like, it just feels like that's lacking for a lot of these guys in the room because, like you said, Spencer, I don't know that anybody's really taken a step forward. And the biggest question mark is Christian Watson because he just hasn't been able to stay healthy and stack success. So, yeah, I really don't know that anybody's visibly improved over the last several years that they've been on the team.
Who was the wideout next to Keenan McCardell when they were really good?
Jimmy Smith.
Can we get Jimmy Smith?
God, he,
maybe we should
let's
get,
go get Jimmy Smith. Let's get Donald Driver.
Let's get anyone.
Maybe we should get Mark Brunell as our, because he was the QB there. We'll just get the Jags,
yep.
That elite offense from the Jags, while Fred Taylor coached the running backs. Jimmy Smith,
Tony
Boselli
can be the offensive line coach.
I mean, it's stacked. We'd be amazing. That's what we should do. You have to have played, you have to have a Pro Bowl under your belt to coach the Packers.
Just any experience in the NFL at wideout, or you've had some success as a coach. That's all I'm asking. I'm really not asking for much. It's just this guy clearly doesn't have as much experience as others in the league.
Will Matt LaFleur not being able to assemble an elite coaching staff be the only hurdle? Like, is that like the hurdle to get over? It feels like it. It feels like Goot's doing a good job.
Only hiring guys that he has a past relationship right. with. Like, maybe that's more.
Maybe
so
he needs
is,
to have better
that's
relationships.
That's a bigger organizational issue.
We need to get him on an app to have better football relationships.
Because, I mean, we all remember before this, too, it was Joe Barry. You know, it's just very tough for Matt to move on from guys. The next pick was Baron Sorrell, 124 overall out of Texas. 6'3", 252, 22 years old, a RAS of 9.32. I think most fans obviously have seen the video at this point of him showing up. Day two is when he showed up, didn't get drafted then. Day three is when it was. He paid his way to get there and obviously drafted in the fourth round. It was pretty cool because Roger Goodell went up and pretty much announced that he was there. Apparently, the guys in the draft room in Green Bay had no idea he was actually there. Goody and LaFleur both said that they thought Roger Goodell was like introducing the person who was going to announce the pick, but no, he was actually there. Very cool. Went out, knew what the Go Pack Go chant was, so that was cool to see that. And then obviously, I'm sure people have seen how emotionally got in his presser, which was funny to have like a live press conference for him the day that he got drafted. But again, looking back, he was one of the more surprising drops in the draft. Justice Mosqueda had a really good piece on Acme Packing talking about it. And if you weren't excited with the pick, maybe you should after hearing this. So his measurables, all that shit. The only other players with his height, weight, 40 time, and 3-cone since 1999 are Trayvon Walker, Lucas Van Ness, Montez Sweat, Jason Owe, which they were all first-round picks, and then Danielle Hunter and Trey Hendrickson. The only player out of that group who hasn't had a 10-sack season is Lucas Van Ness.
What?
Yeah, which, shocking.
It's coming.
So, seems like a really good pick. Justice was saying teams around the league, coaches are going to be like, why didn't you put this guy in front of us? Why didn't you let us scout him at least? And he's another guy, too, who got better as the season went on. Smart guy, team player, high motor. LaFleur was saying that they talked to multiple guys out of Texas. Obviously, Matthew Golden, Isaiah Bond came in on a visit too. And he said that when they asked Texas players, who's the one guy you want to play with from your team, everyone said Baron Sorrell. So again, very positive. you know, later than I think we thought we'd go with Edge, but he's the one guy who I think I'm most excited to see next year, just given everything that, you know, brought up there.
It's interesting too, because what I had heard about him was that, like, he has the measurables, but they don't necessarily show up on tape, which I haven't really paid attention to that, but it sounds like he has everything. It's almost like similar to like Golden and his speed, where it's like the measurables are there, but they don't seem to flash. But what I liked about it was that everybody that I heard said that he's like a consistent rusher. Like, you don't, he does not take plays off. He doesn't disappear. It's that, like, it's the high effort. He's always working. He doesn't like have one move and done. He's working to find different ways. And they said he's like a creative enough. And it's like, that's what we need. We don't like the LVN bull rush and Gary's, whatever Gary does with his chopping his feet. It's like, sometimes it works and they're super athletes, but it's like, we need people who can create after they get stymied on the initial rush, because like in the NFL, your athleticism only takes you so far, and like you get big tackles and what do? You can't bull rush all of them. You got to have other moves. And so it's like, it was nice to see that we didn't just go for, yes, his RAS is high. I think he's got a 9-something RAS, but he's got other tools, which is like what I feel like that defensive edge really needs, the tools to get around these other tackles that are just beat with the bull rush.
He was a guy too, like Golden, who produced more as the season went on. Just Mosqueda was watching game tape, and he was saying at that back end of the year, there was like 3 times a game where he made a drive stopping play, which is what we've always been asking for out of Rashawn Gary.
The only other thing I'll add is, I mean, he played at Texas for 4 years. Since his sophomore year, he's basically had the same or similar TFL numbers, sack numbers. But I think because he's been in school for a few years, he's been able to get game reps. He's basically started since his sophomore year, started and has gained those reps and been able to work on some of those pass rush moves that maybe Lucas Van Ness didn't have coming out, because he wasn't even a starter his last year at Iowa, if you remember. And then Rashawn Gary, I think, left after his junior year, after a slow start. I think he came on and had a bigger junior year. But, you know, this is a guy that stayed for 4 years and basically started for 3, it looks like. So he's got a lot of game reps under his belt.
Next pick, Colin Oliver, 159, defensive end out of Oklahoma State. 6'1", 240, 22 years old, a 9.74 RAS. He, and we talked about it last week going into it, he is that bendy pass rusher that the Packers have kind of stayed away from. Again, I still remember last year Goody saying that Halfley's system, they're still going to go with taking big athletic ends, and he's very athletic, but he is not big. 6'1 is very small for an edge player in the NFL. Again, very versatile player. He even lined up as a slot corner a couple times. 42 tackles for loss, 23.5 sacks in college. In 2024, he only played in 2 games. He had a foot injury, which you said he's completely healthy now. He had 46, so just last year in those 2 games, he had 46 pass rush snaps and registered 15 pressures, giving him a 34.8 pass rush win rate. When we're talking about the best in the NFL, it's 20. So that just shows you how productive he was in college. Mike Gundy called him the Christian McCaffrey of their defense, that he was so versatile that they can move him wherever and he'd be productive. And again, he looks like that designated pass rusher, one of those guys that doesn't just have a bull rush like LVN or Gary. Looks to be a contributor on special teams too. Again, very fast. And it's just, he's a guy who's probably not going to get a ton of snaps, but I just think back to like the Bears game last year at Lambeau, that last drive where we did get pressure. I think JJ did make a couple plays. He didn't get Caleb Williams down at the end, but in those situations where you know they're passing the ball, to have someone out there who's a little more bendy, more of a specialist when it comes to creating pressure, I like having that, and especially getting him in the 4th or 5th round, whichever. I think it was, yeah, 5th round, which seems to be a pretty good value.
Yeah, with how versatile this guy is, it almost feels like this was a really exciting one, I thought. Like, fun, like, kind of a, I thought like the addition of a speed rusher is a lot of fun. At, like, for all we have is these big, huge guys that aren't bendy, and then to add that again, I thought we got like way more versatile on the edge, which I think is super important. Anything is better than what we've been doing, honestly. Like, it's not been good lately. But it kind of reminds me of like the Lions have like this versatile guy in Alex Anzalone, I think is his name. And then like just recently the Vikings have Van Ginkle. Yep. And you've got these guys that you can just like move around. It's almost like when you bring, you know, really versatile like safety down in the box, but these are they're just like in the box all the time. You can move them around. You don't know what they're going to do. They're going to drop into coverage. So it's like fun to see like what Halfley's going to do with that. It seems like kind of a trend across. I think there's a couple other teams that even have linebackers that are similar like this, that you can kind of like, where do they go? But they seem to make it work, and they actually make a fair amount of plays. It seems like it's hard for quarterbacks to kind of figure out what they're doing pre-snap. So I don't know. Hopefully it's fun. I mean, like I said, the rush is like a huge bonus with that versatility on top of it too. It's like, this guy could be, I feel like, really high ceiling. That's what it feels like.
I was going to say, if
he's a guy who I love with Jeff Halfley. If Joe Barry was our defensive coordinator, I think he'd almost be worthless.
I don't think he'd get drafted, right? Joe would be right. Like, we don't want him. Yeah.
Sorry, Spencer. I was going to say that if not for this guy's foot injury, with how productive he was his first 3 years, if he plays all of last year, there's zero chance he's there in the fifth round. Like, we're talking about a dude that played and started 4 years in college, this type of versatility and bend around the edge, and, you know, at that point probably 30-35 sacks, who knows. So if he's able to stay healthy and this is just kind of a one-off fluky injury, you know, this guy might end up being a steal of the draft.
Yeah, very, very exciting pick. It's nice because he is the first guy that Halfley's had that he can, you know, move around. He did play inside linebacker as well. We obviously have Coop and Quay, but having another guy out there, to just another little chess piece on defense, is nice to give Jeff Halfley. The next pick, getting into these later round picks here, Warren Brinson, 198, defensive lineman out of Georgia, 6'5", 315, a 9.10 RAS. Big boy, played 5 seasons for Georgia. Wouldn't be surprised if he plays the most snaps out of this entire draft class's rookie year, just because we don't really have anyone else at nose tackle. But Goody loves his big boys. I'm just going to run through these last three guys. Michael Robinson, 237 pounds, cornerback out of Tulane, 5'10", 183, 23 years old, a 6.41 RAS. Small but fast. He ran a 4.42 40, but tested pretty poorly in the agility drills, which is kind of what the Packers seem to draft in corners. You know, Kevin King and Josh Jackson, Josh Jackson couldn't even run fast. And Eric Stokes, kind of that same build. I guess we do have to take a off ramp here, because I think we all thought we'd take corner earlier. Matt LaFleur, even when asked about it, didn't have a very good poker face and just kind of said that that's not how the board worked out. And looking into it again, there weren't really many options in the first round. The second round, again, is about the only one where we had a chance. Third round, not so much. We had been reaching on those guys. But it leaves our cornerback room right now: Nixon, Hobbs, Valentine, and then it's Kalen King and Robinson competing for that last spot. But it brings up the news today, Rob Domofsky reporting that Jair Alexander could potentially be back. You know, everyone's kind of said it was a done deal that he was going to be traded or cut. But Domofsky tweeted today, according to a source, the Packers and Jair Alexander continue to talk about a possible resolution, which could include a reconciliation to where Alexander plays for the Packers in 2025. After all options are still on the table: release, trade, or return. It seems like Jair's camp probably went from, we're not going to adjust his contract, to, okay, maybe we'll adjust his contract, and that could lead to him coming back, or maybe he's more of a tradable asset with that going on. So we'll get back into the draft picks, but do you guys think there's, it's still tough because we don't know, but I want Jair back. I assume you guys want Jair back. Yeah, Todd, you seem to be him and Han. Billy, looks like you want him back.
I don't know. It just feels like Jair doesn't feel like he wants to be here, and he's a guy that it's like, I don't feel like we're going to get all of Jair if he doesn't want to be here. That's my worry. Like, obviously, Jair, when he's healthy, great player. I mean, he makes the team better. I just worry that it's another situation where, like, he tweaks something. He's like, oh, I'm out for the season, so I'm not going to hurt myself for this team that I don't want to be a part of. Like, and then potential locker room issues. I don't know.
I think that's a fair point. I would like Jair back, not to hit this cap number, but if we can come to a resolution on something, I definitely like him back. I think he's worth the risk, because when he is healthy, he's still a good player, and we just seem to be super thin in that secondary. I think we've been relatively healthy back there, at least in the cornerback room the last couple of years, but I don't know how many times I want to keep tempting fate like that.
The other thing that was interesting, Domofsky said this on KBN on ESPN Wisconsin, that the guys in the locker room really like him. Like, he's a fun guy to be around, all that. It doesn't seem like there's any issues there. But it's the players aren't the ones dealing with the fallout of him being hurt. And it seems like out of, you know, the players, the front office, and the coaching staff, the coaching staff might be the ones who have soured on him the most. And obviously we talked about a bunch last year with LaFleur not really having a great poker face when asked about Jair and his injury going on. So I don't know, still interesting. He didn't show up. Matt Schneidman went through all the, like, 154 pictures from yesterday when they had their first OTAs, did not see anything from Jair. So maybe the team asked him not to show up, not really sure, but I don't know. There's some hope he'll be back, and I still hope he's playing for the Packers next year, but who really knows at this point? There's not really any great free agents out there. Rasul Douglas might be done. I'm just not really sure how many options there are. The last draft pick to talk about is John Williams, 250 pounds, offensive lineman out of Cincinnati, 6'4", 322, 23 years old, a 7.41 RAS. Might transition to guard. He was also a pre-draft visit, and again, 5 out of our 8 draft picks had a pre-draft visit with the Packers. But John Williams, Micah Robinson, and Warren Brinson, do you guys have who are you guys most interested in there?
Brinson. I think anytime you can get in the 6th round, get a 9.1 RAS guy, I mean, that's nice. Bring some athleticism. I mean, for a guy that weighs 315 pounds, he has a 31-inch vertical, and he broad jumped like 9.5 feet. It's pretty impressive. So I thought that was kind of fun to see a guy that's that athletic on the inside.
I saw something, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was either Brinson led that Georgia defense last year in either quarterback pressures or hurries or one of those two stats. He doesn't necessarily have the stats to pay it off. He doesn't have the sacks or the TFLs or whatever, but I think it shows that he can push the pocket. So I think he's an interesting piece next to Kenny Clark next year.
But do you think that moves Kenny Clark inside with him being more athletic? So then, cause he seems like a better three technique.
I saw that Georgia used him all over the defensive line. So what I saw, and I don't remember who this was from, that was that Kenny would move to nose tackle, and then Wyatt would start next to Kenny at the three tech. And then, you know, depending on the package, we could potentially play Brinson all over the place.
Feels like he would be a good one to come in on third down. I mean, that's a good rotation if you can get him in on a passing down.
The big talk the offseason has been that Kenny's probably going to move to nose and let Wyatt, yeah, get more of those three tech snaps where he's a little bit more disruptive in the pass game.
Yeah.
UDFAs. First guy to talk about, Nazir Stackhouse.
Sorry, can I?
I'll allow it this time. I've only interrupted you like 5 times already, so I guess you can do it once.
Well, 2 things about John Williams. First of all, loved his work in Star Wars.
I forgot to make that joke.
I had that teed up the entire time. But second, he also seems like kind of a mauler and seems like he also has the versatility to play kind of all over the place. Also an aerospace engineering major, so he's one smart dude.
Yeah, brings you back to John Kuhn being a chemist and Brad Jones being a rocket scientist as well. He might have had the same major. I don't know what the different rocket science-y majors are in college. But back to Nazir Stackhouse out of Georgia, another guy, another nose tackle. He played next to Brinson at Georgia, so those two guys are probably going to battle it out for that nose tackle spot. I wouldn't be surprised if Nazir overtakes Colby Wooden to make the roster. Linebacker Jamon Dumas Johnson out of Kentucky, you know, kind of like Stackhouse, he was another highly regarded free agent signing. Brugler had him as a borderline draft choice, but others had him much higher, and he was pretty productive in college. He played in Georgia before he transferred to Kentucky, but he was a tackling machine there, so he could be someone, especially in kind of a weird linebacker room right now behind the starters. And then there's the corner, Kazir Bugs Brown out of Florida Atlantic. He's a guy that the screenshots or the pictures of him kind of went a little viral on Twitter because he is... he is 6'1", 223 pounds, and he's a corner. He ran a 4.53 40. Again, he's like about the size of a freaking linebacker in college, so he's kind of an interesting pick. And the only other news to talk about with the roster is that the Packers did sign Isaiah Simmons today officially as well. Former first-round pick for the Cardinals. Played the last couple of years for the Giants. Wasn't really good the last few years, but he has been a pretty good special teams player. But again, a nice little piece for Jeff Hafley to have. But anyone there really speak to you?
You know, the fat corner seems fun. It's kind of a fun thing to have, you know?
I like Stackhouse. The idea of him playing next to his college running mate is kind of neat. And then the running back out of South Dakota State, Amar Johnson, looks interesting. Averaged 6 yards a carry his last 2 years at college. Had a really good FCS program that won at least one national title when he was there, and consistently one of the top 3-4 teams in the nation. So kind of excited to see him get a shot.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that we didn't take a running back in one of those rounds for how deep this draft class was. But again, we said that about the defensive line, corner, and running back, and we didn't really go at those positions early in this draft. A little tough too with the way the board fell, but not going to complain. I still like the draft overall. And Nate, most important part, draft grades. What I mean, I'm giving us a B.
You don't want an A.
No.
If you get an A, that just means, I mean, that's actually an F. That's what it is.
The Browns probably got an A for Shedeur Sanders in the 5th round because he was supposed to go in the top 15.
Did you 15. See Mel Kiper? He gave out one A+, and of course it was to the Cleveland Browns when he was complaining about Shedeur dropping when he did that. Oh again, God. For as much as I bitch about Mark Murphy at times, the fact that the Browns owner had to have stepped in and be like, we're drafting him when they took that other quarterback in the 3rd round. It's like I'm sure everyone saw that shot too in the Browns war room when they drafted him, and it was like golf clap. Like no one was very excited. It was very, very clear that they did not make that pick.
Do you, this happens, it has to happen, right? So people, obviously agents are for sure offering NFL analysts money to talk up their people, right? I mean, it happens. Do you think they take the money? Do you think that anything that any of these, I'm not saying anyone in particular, but do you think there's a possibility that any of those wheels are getting greased, pockets are getting laced, and then people are like, oh yeah, I'll say a couple extra things about this person. You know, I can do that for 50 grand.
Maybe a little bit. I don't know if it's so much money.
There's for sure offers.
I don't know how often it happens for like high round picks or potential high round picks in Shedeur Sanders. I think for guys on TV,
sure, they probably don't need it.
But I think guys on TV, it's more so when you talk about it, you're going to get more clicks. You're going to get more eyeballs with what you're talking about. And that's why it was such a big story in the draft.
And to be fair, I mean, you'd have to talk about these players early on in the process to get there. It wouldn't be on draft day. It's too late at that point. But I just was curious what your thoughts were on that.
I mean, don't... I'm not saying that NFL teams and GMs and scouts like look at mock drafts and say, oh, we should go look at this guy. But don't they kind of look at mock drafts to see like, oh, this is kind of how the board might fall kind of a thing. So if all of a sudden, you know, all these mock drafts are, oh, you know, this guy could sneak into the end of the first round. Like, is that going to change a team's thinking? And if you have that in the back of your mind when you go to scout him, are they going to be more inclined to see some of these positives? Where you go, oh, yeah, I could see him in the end of the first round. And maybe that changes how they rank their board. I don't know.
But I feel like it's not like you wouldn't give. I mean, some of these guys were old personnel guys. I mean, a lot of the draft experts were personnel guys in organizations. So it's not like they're not idiots. You know, so it's not like their opinions mean nothing.
I mean, watching Daniel Jeremiah's reaction compared to Mel Kiper's night and day, and Jeremiah is, like you said, an old
old scout.
That's why it's like those mock drafts right before the draft from guys like Daniel Jeremiah are a little bit more important, because most of the mocks are coming from blogger boys or whatever who aren't getting information behind the scenes. So, you know, like these coaching staffs and front offices who are digging and talking to their coaching staffs in college or what they say in interviews, that's something that people making mocks have no idea of. And that's obviously something that really hurt Shadur, because there's been that reporting that his meeting with the Giants went terribly. And especially in a lot of rooms where where if he's not going the first and second round, he's probably going to be a backup. And what kind of baggage do you want to bring into your building for a backup quarterback? So I think that's why he fell and why he was probably off so many guys' draft boards. All right, that's the draft. I think it went pretty well. If you would have, again, if you told me that we would leave day one and day two without a single defensive pick, I would have said you're crazy. That was probably the most shocking thing. But looking back at the draft in totality, it's like, I like it. We have everyone's fun one way or another that we drafted.
How you would not believe if somebody said two wideouts in the first 2 days.
Yeah, I mean
that's
if
crazy.
If you flip the positions that we drafted, I probably would have believed that more than, you know, the way it went. If we took a corner in the first round, and then an offensive tackle after that,
offensive lineman, corner,
defensive lineman after that,
a couple of defensive guys,
So moving on to much more important news, just like last week. Matt LaFleur was on Bussin' with the Boys. I don't listen to that show, but when they have Packers on, I usually like to get those interviews, especially Matt LaFleur, who's pretty tight in pressers. It's nice to see him a little bit more laid back talking about things. But a couple nice little nuggets in there. He said he doesn't have 15 scripted plays anymore. It's more like 25 going into games, which some people might not find interesting, but I thought that was, to think that there's 25 plays that they're ready to go with when sometimes they might only have like 40 or 50 in a given game. So I thought that was something. He talked about when he got hired by the Packers. So he was the last interview of those 8 or 10 guys that they had, got the job obviously. But before that, he got a call from Rodgers the next day after his interview. And he was like, oh, well, that might mean something. And it was right after that he got a call from the Packers a couple hours later offering him the job. So it was within 24 hours from interview to getting hired, which is pretty surprising. I mean, it seemed like at the time, too. I mean, Mark Murphy kind of took over that initial presser where it seemed like Goody and other people wanted to do a second interview. And Matt even thought it was going to be, oh, he's going to have a second interview. So he was pretty shocked when they came with the head coaching offer. Josh Jacobs said that LaFleur plays to his strengths in the locker room, and he said he spits fire after they win games, which I found surprising because sometimes Matt comes off as a little cringy, so it was nice to hear a locker room leader say that. And he said the worst thing about being a coach is having to fire guys, and specifically saying like going to war with these guys then having to fire one. But he brought up how tough firing Joe Barry was, and that how that was one of the toughest things he's had to do as a coach, because he's such good friends with them, which Wilde was saying that he's not actually that close with them, but to hear Matt say that they're friends obviously created more of a clear picture there. He also said that he would not cut his dick off for a Super Bowl, which is a little sad to hear.
Not a football
I think
guy.
Dan Campbell said he would cut his dick off for one. That went a little viral on Pardon My Take a couple of years ago. So
not surprising.
Not surprising. One, that it was from Pardon My Take, but two, that Matt saying he wouldn't cut off his Johnson. But the last thing I want to talk about, one of the more interesting things from the interview, is this clip that I'll play now when Will Compton asked him about like what's the more tough interactions that he's had while being a head coach.
Has any conversation went sideways? You don't have to say names, but have you, is there an example?
Sideways?
Yeah, where a conversation, yeah.
There's been a few.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Dude standing up, getting in your face a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I've had a player a couple years back. It was just him and I, and this is before we had, we renovated our offices and we're in a different spot of the stadium now, but I mean, we're in this cinder block room and I thought he was going to whip my ass and there was nobody around. So I was just like, oh, well, here it goes, guys. This is the end.
This is it.
This is it.
It's like,
and you try to de-escalate the situation, but sometimes there's no getting through. And it was one of those situations. So, but I'm still here today. So I live to tell about it.
Still pretty. Did he put his hands on you or just get up in your face?
No, it was, I thought it might go down, but it didn't.
So I want to open it up to you guys. He said a couple years ago, and it was funny too, when he said it not getting through, he like put his hand over his face. Like when he's talking to the player, he's just not listening. Who do you guys think he's talking about?
How long do you think it was? The renovation is what's making me... Was this like early in his career?
I don't
know
why he said that, because that's just a very current thing going on, because they're upgrading the locker rooms right now.
I did a Google search because I wanted to come up with a good answer for this, and I saw that they did renovation of the offices at Lambeau starting in 2023 and wrapping up early this year.
Okay, so pre-2023.
So to me, that's kind of the time frame I was looking at.
I'm going to say, I mean, Darius is like the fun one, right? Like, ooh, he's even more of a villain. But I'm going to say Tony Brown from way back. I think he got cut.
I love Tony Brown.
And I did look up when he got cut, and he got cut right at the end of the season. So there may not have been anybody around for that interaction. So it could. And Tony Brown got chucked out of the Cotton Bowl, Orange Bowl, one of the big bowl games for fighting. I believe in the locker room. So with his own team.
I love Tony. He was great on special teams. Rogers even said he was a decent corner. He might even still be in the league. I think he was last year. I believe he got signed with the Bengals after we cut him. But I wasn't thinking Tony Brown. Billy, what did you think?
I was going to say Za'Darius Smith, because there was a whole lot of baggage coming up to the point where we were going to cut Za'Darius Smith. There was the whole team captain thing that Za'Darius was pissed off about. He had that injury suffered in the off season, going into the 22 season, the 21 season, and then finally comes back, plays, or he comes in like October and is like, I want to get back on the field as soon as we can. And LaFleur's like, let's get him back in the building and see what he actually looks like. And then didn't actually end up playing until like the playoff game. And then we ended up cutting him in March. So similar to you, Todd, you know, LaFleur talked about before the renovation kind of just being, you know, him in the building, like there's nobody else around. And then he also made it sound like he was a little bit intimidated. And Za'Darius Smith is a big dude at 6'5 and, you know, 275 pounds or whatever. So that was my first thought. And then he goes and signs with Minnesota in the offseason. And, you know, because he wanted to stick it to the Packers twice a year, like that. There's an awful lot that I think adds up to maybe being the culprit in this story.
The guy who I think it is, and I'm pretty confident in this, and you guys haven't said it, I think it was Kylan Hill.
I looked at that, but I just don't think so. But really? Maybe I misremembered
things. For sure. Him, and I feel pretty good about it because Matt brought it up right away. And Z's an asshole, and nobody hates Z more than me, but he's more of a like anti-social asshole. You know, he'll post on Instagram or whatever, but I don't think he's actually getting in people's faces. I never heard of him being that type of a distraction. But Kalen Hill, who you know, tore his ACL or whatever his rookie year. And then that next year, he was on the PUP. He got activated from the PUP. We did not put him on the active roster. That's when the kick return was not looking good. We had some open spaces at the running back room. And if you remember, he was a surprise cut midway through that season. So I'm almost, again, I don't know, but I'm pretty certain that he probably got in LaFleur's face, was pissed he wasn't getting playing time, was pissed that he wasn't being used on the active roster, let LaFleur know, and that's why he got cut out of nowhere in the middle of that season. That's what I think.
I did think about him because I seem to remember that he had maybe gotten a little bit of playing time and then we cut him. And sure enough, like you said, we activated him off the PUP. He played in like two games. He had like eight snaps total and he had one carry. And then, yeah, like the next week we cut him. And then, I mean, maybe to your point, Spencer, he didn't get picked up again in the NFL. He's bounced around with a couple of UFL or XFL or CFL, you know, some minor league football team, but never again touched the NFL. So you don't wonder if that's what led to it. Teams would call up Matt LaFleur and he's like, well, let me tell you about what happened when I went to cut him.
Exactly.
And being a fringe roster player, he wouldn't be worth going through that.
Right. He was a really talented guy too. His rookie year, I mean, he was one of the names that popped up a ton in training camp. I brought up before, but how I get pissed off at blogger boys getting all hyped up, like Andy Herman tweeting out, Matt LaFleur needs to make a Kylan Hill package for this offense, and he played like fucking 20 snaps for this team.
But people would have been around middle of November when he was cut.
That's why I wasn't so sure.
He says nobody would have been there. He was waived on November 15th.
But I think he's saying that more like where they were at in the building, like walking through the halls or whatever, and they just talked. I think it's more so the situation that he was in where he's like, this guy might beat the shit out of me, more so than nobody was in the building. It was midnight. It was the off season or whatever. That's the way I took it.
November 15th, 2022 was a Tuesday, so did the team have the day off or something?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe he knew no one was there and he came in, I don't know.
Either way. Tuesday, bruise day, it's a pad day.
Either way, I mean, I think that's what it was. We never got the full story on that, and even that presser, Matt was like, he's unprofessional, we had to move on, yada yada, goody cut him, so.
Z's unprofessional.
Oh, God. And he's a free agent. I wonder if he's going to sign with the Bears. I kind of hope he does so that he'll play with every team in the NFC North. Last thing we got on the docket, the Brett Favre documentary announced from Netflix today. Quote, the fall of Favre. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for it. It's like a minute long, but it's going over, you know, obviously the Jen Sturger stuff when he was with the Jets. There was video of him like chugging beers, and I've heard people, you know, work on the beat for the Packers say, like, if there were cameras around in social media when Favre first came into town, it would have been a different story because he was very Johnny Manziel-esque. He obviously had addiction issues with the perks or whatever, Vicodin, and he's been sober, I believe, since then. He's never had a beer since that 1998, 1999 season. So little interesting. There was also the shit, obviously the welfare fraud and all that. But are you guys interested in this? Are you going to be watching? What do you think of this announcement?
I might watch, but I don't know. I mean, the whole like Manziel comparison. Also, like people used to have lunch beers and go back to work in the 90s. So I don't know. Or maybe like, that part seems a little bit like it was a different time a little bit, but I mean, obviously the dick pics and, you know, those are probably probably not an okay time for that, yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's probably, I mean, we know now his personal life is a little bit controversial, but still love him when he throws the ball for the Packers, right? I mean, not still that he did, you know, so.
Based on what I saw in that minute-long trailer, whatever it was, did either of you read the Jeff Pearlman book, Gunslinger, when it came out a couple years ago? So everything that's in that trailer is basically gone through in the book. Like, his addiction issues, his struggles with alcohol, like, showing up to meetings still drunk. Like, that's why he got run out of town, out of Atlanta. That's why Jerry Glanville wanted to get rid of him. And then, finally, after going to rehab in the before the 96 season is when he apparently got clean. But, I mean, I remember when that Perlman book came out, like, the instant reaction was, oh, this is just piling on and trying to make Brett Favre look bad and whatever. And it's like, well, I'd be curious to see, you know, who they talk to in this book and kind of go, or in the documentary, and see who Perlman talked to. And is it the same folks or is it other personalities?
I'm a little interested in watching it. I think mostly because it looks like it's a one show event. Like, I didn't watch the Rogers thing. I think it was multiple episodes. But I'm in the same boat as you, Billy. Another thing with that book, Jeff Perlman, Wilde said that, I don't know if Wilde was part of it or, you know, was interviewed for it, but Wilde called him out, like, it was either I didn't say that or that didn't happen. And Perlman replied to him and said, well, that doesn't matter. You know, it's, I forgot what his reasoning was, but he knowingly, you know, lied in the book or hyped things up that didn't.
Took something out of context, right? Or.
And with this documentary too, like, I saw Peter King in it. I saw Jen Sturger, and this is me and my own biases respecting the media, but I didn't see any people from Green Bay in it. And it seems more so like they're going to be talking about at the national scale how he's viewed rather than how he really was. Like, I'd like to hear beat guys talking about it instead of, you know, focusing on the welfare stuff, which is obviously terrible. And there's a, you know, obviously Favre doesn't seem like a fantastic dude. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, he sucks, but there's a lot of really bad guys who played in the NFL. Like, Lawrence Taylor, really bad guy. I mean, Warren Sapp is an absolute piece of shit, and obviously stealing from poor people.
Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis may or may not have murdered a guy. I mean, we had a serial killer on the team back in the 70s or for a training camp. So it's like, I understand this is going to get clicks and views, and rightfully so if you don't know the whole story. And it's like, Favre's bad, but I don't think he should be up there with, like, worst guys ever in the NFL, which kind of seems to be the narrative right now.
If we're ranking the top 100 worst, Favre's not on the list.
Exactly.
It's not even, there's no way.
Right.
It's not even close.
It makes me wonder, you know, they kind of talked about three things or showed three different things in that trailer, right? Like the alcoholism, the Jen Sturger dick pics, and then the welfare fraud. Like, what do you think they're going to focus on the most? Like, it seemed like Jen Sturger got an awful lot of airtime in that clip. And maybe that's just to get people interested because, oh, that's an attractive lady. And they're talking about Brett Favre being a pervert and whatever else. Like, and maybe that's all it is. And they're just going to talk about how it's gone from alcoholism, which millions of people around the country struggle with. And, you know, you, it can lead to bad decisions. And then, okay, dick pics, like, still not great. Like, you're kind of going downhill there, Brett. And then, okay, you're committing welfare fraud in one of the poorest states in the nation in Mississippi. Like, that's a pretty really, that's a really, really shitty thing to do. Like, if that's how they frame it, I think I can see it. If they spend, if this is an hour and a half long documentary and they talk to Jen Sturger for 45 minutes, then that's going to come off different to me.
I think it all started when he went to the Jets, you know? It's like, that's what the Jets do to a player. You spend all those years in Green Bay, perfectly normal, everyone loves you.
It's all Ted Thompson's fault for trading him.
Then you go to the Jets, and, like, Aaron Rodgers now is doing drugs. Mm-hmm. It's all this. He never did any of those drugs when he was in Green Bay. You know what I mean? It's like all this, you know, Brett Favre sending dick pics. It's just, it's New York, you know? Like, what are you going to do? That's what everyone does in New York.
I'm just glad Devontae got out after only half a season.
Mm-hmm. A full season would have done him in.
But yeah, I mean, that is a good point, Todd, because with the Packers, you know, he was an alcoholic, but he got clean, goes to the Jets, sends dick.
Green Bay cured him.
Yeah, goes to the Jets, sends dick pics, and then after he's with the Vikings, welfare fraud. You know, so he was mm-hmm. a good boy for us.
No.
He got clean.
Nothing bad happened when he was here.
Nothing at all.
I mean, you look at what happened to Darren Sharper after he mm-hmm. left Green Bay and went yep. to Minnesota and New Orleans. Yep. Just mm-hmm. saying.
We make guys better. You know, Corin Robinson, we brought him in, and he stopped being an alcoholic. That's not true. but
Eddie Lacy,
he didn't show up on the Love Boat in Green Bay.
So true. It was not there.
What are you going to say about Eddie Lacy?
After he left, he gained a bunch of weight.
He definitely wasn't fat in Green Bay. Mike McCarthy definitely didn't call him out about that.
Well, how about he was his heaviest away from Green Bay.
They don't have China food in Green Bay, I'm pretty sure. That's only in Seattle.
I saw a tweet today. I don't remember exactly what the food was.
Poor Eddie. I love Eddie. Oh. That's so mean. I'm
and he
sorry.
Was in Green Bay for the draft, too. Everyone still loves Eddie Lacy, but the one picture I saw was... It was someone, the caption was like Eddie Lacy after a big game. And it was someone like sitting in a car, like holding an egg roll or some other type of food, like ashing it outside the car. Like he was smoking it after a game. Oh, I love Eddie. Still probably my favorite Packers running back.
I think he is like my favorite Packers running back ever. Like, he's just so much fun. And, like, his personality was also... Yeah.
Amon Green, better back. Aaron Jones, better back. Ryan Grant, maybe a better back. But Eddie Lacy was just... Mm-hmm. The way he ran was... Because you watch him, it's like, this shouldn't be happening.
Reckless abandon. And then he throws off a spin move.
Oh. And the way, like, once he got rolling, like, you really had to want to bring Eddie down. Like, he would run through everything.
I'm such a loser. I'm, like, getting goosebumps thinking of John Kuhn lead blocking and Eddie Lacy in short yardage situations. Like, it was just awesome.
No, I'm picturing that screen pass he had against the Bears when Rodgers did six touchdowns in the first half. And he, like, cuts it all the way across the field. And, like you said, he gets going and it's like, I don't think the Bears want to tackle him. And then Jordy comes out of nowhere and throws like the ceiling block. Oh my God. That was one of the greatest plays I've ever seen.
And you can tell like at the end, the legs are starting to give way. Like he's stumbling a little bit.
He's like,
but
I gotta get the end zone.
It's a long way across that field at an angle.
With that, that's the episode. That's the review. I don't know when we'll have another one, but if you could please leave a 5-star review on Spotify or iTunes. Leave a 5-star rating. Leave a review. If you leave a review, screenshot it, send it to us at pmppodcast@gmail.com or DM it to us on Twitter, and we will send you a free koozie. Also, if you leave a review on Spotify or a comment, I should say, we'll read it on next week's episode or whenever our next one is. Todd, what should they write this week? Do you got a prompt for them?
Yeah, so we are actually hiring an audio guy. So if anybody out there is an audio professional, the pay is not negotiable and it's not high. So we'll have to talk about that offline. But you have to come to my house specifically and fix my audio. And that's it.
This is going to be year 7 of the podcast, and we are still working out the kinks of the audio. We all have the same mic, same mixer. Billy and I are fine, and then Todd's is just tough to figure out. Late last season, I fixed my audio a little bit, and I told Todd to do the same thing with his mixer, and ever since then, once we start recording, it's like, why is there a buzz? What's going on? I'm sure people love...
I used to think because there's like audio people, like there's like audio people in like movies and all this other stuff, and I'm like, what do you need an audio person for? And then I have like a mixer with 3 knobs and I'm like, this is hell. I cannot get it to work.
It took us 25 minutes to get the episode started and we still don't know how Todd's audio is gonna work out.
Yeah, so if you guys can't hear me, that's why. We need audio help. I need audio help badly.
If you're interested in applying, send an email to todd@pmppod.com for consideration.
Exactly.
That definitely exists. You guys got anything else before we get out of here?
No.
Good. Billy?
Go Pack, go baby.
With that, former Green Bay Packer A.J. Dillon, take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy. Just watch.
Anywhere I quit my job. This won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month. Then they took my money away. Yeah, well, now I don't care. Cause they ain't working like me down here.
It's So you haven't played a video game in 10 years.
I think it was Carbon. Okay. I have not played a video game released within the last 10 years.
Have you ever played anything online, like via a console?
Back in college.
Via the interweb?
I played Call of Duty with one of my friends back in college, and I got really, really frustrated because I would get headshot, and then I'd respawn, and then within 3 seconds, I would get headshot again. So I had a grand old time.
Is this like one night?
It was a single night. I played for about 15 minutes, and I was like, fuck this.
Okay. Well, at least you gave it a try.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.